Welcome to the second episode of the Creator Spotlight Podcast. Today's episode is with Eric Cantor and Adam Katz from finance media company Vincent. Vincent's offerings include three weekly newsletters and a podcast. Their work is about keeping their audience of around 70,000 subscribers informed on what's happening in the world of alternative investments, meaning things like crypto, real estate, collectibles, art, or venture opportunities. Enjoy. So tell me, Eric, I guess you start. Who are you and what is Vincent? And start from the beginning of what is Vincent.
Yeah, so my name is Eric Cantor. Vincent is the fifth company that I've started. So I guess you could say I'm a technologist. I've also been very deep in private market investing. So I've done at this point a little less than 100, I've been counted recently, a little less than 100 angel and seed checks into early stage companies, many of which were people who I worked with, people who spun off from my companies. The way Vincent got going is in 2019, we were seeing this real increase in interest among friends, family, you know, users we were seeing and talking to in different types of testing around wanting to invest in these asset classes. And we're talking about venture capital, we're talking about crypto, private real estate, private credit, art and collectibles, all these sort of hard to access asset classes, whether it's because you need this specialized knowledge, like what a couple of our partners bring to the table with collectibles and cards, or whether it's sort of gated, like venture capital. It was very hard to access that just because you got to write $1 million checks. And as we were seeing this increase in interest, because people wanted to get into different, you know, diversified portfolios, we were also seeing this explosion of new managers, new asset classes, this theme of the democratization of investing. And with the background of the founders, and what we'll tell you about Adam, we also have myself, who's been in the space for a while, Slava Rubin, who was one of the founders of Indiegogo, as well as one of the authors of the Jobs Act, which was the congressional legislation in 2012 that really opened the door for a lot of these new investment types to exist. All that came together and we said, you know, let's go out and help these investors understand these confusing, fascinating, challenging, frustrating, profitable markets that we've been navigating ourselves. So that's really what Vincent is and why we're here.
Okay. Adam, can you give your intro?
Yeah, for sure. So I have a legal background. I'm a lawyer, but about 10 years ago, I started getting into real estate investing and spent quite a bit of time. I live in Brooklyn, and so the New York real estate market is obviously very desirable. And with a few good investments, I saw how powerful that could be. And like Eric said, it's a very difficult thing to access, obviously New York specifically, but any kind of real estate investing. That was sort of my entryway into alternative investing, was with real estate. And I have an interest in sports and art and collectibles. And over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, as those spaces have become a little bit more democratized, I've done a lot of research and done a lot of writing on those areas. And I was drawn to this idea of opening up historically difficult asset classes to everyday investors. It's still very much a work in progress. You know, there's still a lot of things that are very difficult to access, difficult to understand. They're very opaque markets. Some of them are open to only accredited investors. Some of them are opening up to everybody. And there's a lot of companies, a lot of platforms, a lot of things in this space that are claiming to offer certain things. And some of them do great jobs and some of them don't. And so what drew me to this was the ability to help people who were like me a decade ago get into this market, because I do think that it can be life-changing financially if you do your research, you understand what you're doing, and you make smart decisions.
Cool. So it's, you guys keep talking about this, like access and giving access to these asset classes, which if I'm correct, like looking back at those, the TechCrunch article, like the early, maybe first iteration of Vincent was like a search engine for these kind of assets, correct me if I'm wrong. And then now it's developed into, like, instead of search engine being the way to provide access and, you know, give access to an audience, now it's content. And it seems to me like you guys have gone from being sort of a tech company to now a media company. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're on a mission to help people navigate this challenging market. And there's a lot of ways to get there, right? Building apps is frankly what that's my main path. Whereas like the content stuff is more of a passion or a hobby. It's not something I've ever done professionally, but I do really enjoy it. You know, it's really like, how are we going to help solve this problem of information, of access? And like, yes, you're right. We've built some tech, we've built some websites, we've built an app, we raised a fund. But really now we're focused on just like telling the story, engaging the investors. And this is just the way that we're delivering that mission today. And I think the evolution is actually pretty sensible, and it's really been consistent in terms of what we've wanted to accomplish. We've just realized that, you know, okay, if approach A doesn't work, try the next one.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Like, again, what I was saying earlier about how it's like, it seems like you guys have come to this in a different way than like most other creators, but I would put you in this category of creators where it's like, you know, you're coming from the expert angle where you've got these years of experience mm-hmm. on the topic. So like that then is why people come to you, which I do want to ask about the audience. I think looking at the site, you say you have 70,000 subscribers to Vincent Spotlight, and there's the three newsletters. There's the Spotlight, Pre-Money, and the Real Estate, correct? So is the 70,000, like, is that total? Is that just for Vincent Spotlight?
That is just for Vincent Spotlight. We've got about 40,000 on the Real Estate Report, and I think about 36 on Pre-Money.
Nice. And then, like, who that audience is, I'm curious if you know, if like how much of that is people who are like actively investing and, you know, like engaging these activities, and then how much is more like aspirational, like they're just interested in the space but not necessarily engaging. Do you have any idea?
It definitely runs the gamut, right? I mean, so we've been building this audience for 4 years now, because even when we were doing the other chapters you referred to, we were really digging deep into, we had this weekly newsletter, Spot, which is now Spotlight. Mm. Since 2019, we also, when we were in more in the investing game, we're doing a lot of memos and deal analysis and quantitative analysis. So we were writing and communicating that way. The audience, frankly, is sort of the accumulation of all these different pieces of outreach and all these programs and people we know and people who've seen us on LinkedIn. And it really runs the gamut. I mean, you know, when we ask, you know, we find that about a third of our audience is accredited investors, which means they have a net worth of $1 million or more, excluding the primary residence, or they make $200,000, which puts them in position to participate in a lot more of the opportunities that we talk about and share. However, there's also a number of opportunities for investors that are looking to write smaller checks, and there's many of those. And then you've got the handful of folks who can write, you know, get my arithmetic out, write like a 9-figure check. I'm not going to say that the audience is full of those, but you know, we really don't differentiate on how big is your check. It's more about, do you want to really get in the weeds on how these industries work, what the opportunities are, what the patterns are, so that whatever investment level you're at, you can engage.
Yeah.
But the audience is, you know, it's all US based. It's a third accredited. It's, you know, people that are somewhere on that investment journey.
To add to that, when we've done surveys, we found that about 70% of people have come in already having invested in one of the alternative assets. But, you know, there's not a lot of knowledge overlap necessarily between real estate and collectibles and venture capital and crypto. I mean, there are fundamental investing maxims that we try, you know, do your research, make sure that everything is on the level. Due diligence is important. Evaluate every opportunity separately. There are things that are universal between these things, but what I think we try to offer is if you are interested in real estate, you can come in and learn about all these other alternative asset classes. And we also found that about, like Eric said, a third are accredited, but about a third are actively looking to invest 5 figures or more into some sort of alternative investing opportunity.
Yeah, that's really impressive. You guys have built that kind of data profile, and that's like the fact that a third of 70,000 people, you know, are coming in with like the 200 that are accredited. That's amazing. You said, Eric, that you've been doing the weekly Spotlight since 2019.
But when I was looking, I've only seen, you know, what's on Beehive, which goes back about a year. So I'm curious, like, how that newsletter has evolved, because that, if, you know, the Vincent itself has changed and evolved a lot in the past 5 years, but the newsletter is like that constant that now is your hero product. It seems like, how has that changed? And like, what was the intent with the newsletter at the beginning? And what's been the evolution? What is it now? Is it different than it was 5 years ago?
It's a good question. I mean, you know, the inspiration of Spotlight was that, hey, we're going to be in this market. We're serious about this market. We want to, you know, help. We want to give before we take, right? That's kind of like how I operate in general. And I think it's also happens to be a very effective tactic at building trust with your industry before you start, you know, trying to sell them some product. So really, before we even had a proper website with Vincent, we would go through the week's news in private markets, cobble together a few bullet points, and send a little memo to our audience. And that, through many evolutions, is now Spotlight. But I'm sure if you went, we should go back for fun and take a look at the, you know, March 2019 pulse and see what that looks like. But really, you know, somebody asked me this the other day, you know, why are you doing, you know, we enjoy, like Adam and I are geeking out on like, how much did this baseball card go for at the auction? What are the factors in that? We would be talking about that even if we weren't sending an email about it. We would be talking about that even if we weren't trying to build a company. So to do this service to everyone and say, hey, let's let you in on our thinking and save you some time, tell you what the important stuff is, because we just studied it anyway, and we're not going to shut up about it. That just seems like a natural thing to do. So we started doing that, and it kind of accompanied us through these different patterns of the journey. And then, as he said, we woke up one day and said, wow, this is really the most powerful asset we've built and the one that we have fun with. You know, it's I'm not going to say it's not stressful, but like, I mean, we actually look forward to putting this in people's hands. We look forward to these events, discussions, and podcasts that we do with interesting people, investors. And we take it quite seriously because we're also part of that audience. So I think it's just an outgrowth of you know, what comes naturally to us.
I would say in the couple of years that I've been, you know, writing these newsletters, I would say the mission hasn't changed. It's to educate the audience and keep them informed. We've certainly gone through a lot of different design iterations. And like Eric said, if you look back at the ones from, you know, 2021, I think we've made significant improvements and, you know, and different just formats to get people to get this information in the most concise and effective way possible so that they don't have to spend the hours and hours that we spend reading about this stuff and researching it and looking into it. They can get in 5 minutes, get it delivered to them for free once a week and feel like they understand what is happening in these markets.
Yeah. That's so what you said about like, Eric, I think what you said about like, you know, that you were already doing this, you guys would be like texting or whatever, meeting up and chatting about this baseball card that went for this price, whatever. Anyways, I think like that's like such a commonality with people I talk to. Like I talked to this guy a few weeks ago who runs a fantasy Premier League, you know, like the English soccer league fantasy Premier League newsletter. And it's like, he was, what he said was about a different topic, but it's the same thing, right? He's like, me and my friends are like the hardcore experts who are going in and like listening to the podcast, reading the Reddit posts, doing all this. So it's like distilling that into a, you know, a thing you can read in 3 minutes is like the value we bring. And I think that's, you know, that's not the only model of newsletter, but I think it's one that like, again, because to really make a good product, you have to be doing it in your own time and absorbing it. So yeah, I don't know. Did you expect that like, you would end up like building this kind of one, it's because it's kind of like a one to many, it's not consulting, but it's like this one to many, like, is that what you expected to build here? Is that like,
I mean, you know, startups are fun. You sort of find where the opportunity is and go after it. And by the time you perfect that, you realize that it's already obsolete and you got to take it to the next level. So getting our thoughts together and building this like honest and complete sort of thorough, you know, communication with a broad audience, it has been part of what we've been since day one. If you asked me 4 years ago, would that be the focus right now? I probably would have said no. But yeah, you know, you got to follow where your passion is and you got to follow where the opportunity is. And I feel like, you know, this has been the best quarter we ever had as a business, probably because we're doing the thing that we're meant to be doing.
Yeah. How many of you is it, by the way, who make up Vincent?
We have a team of five now. So we have a couple contributors on the content design side. We have Adam and myself who run the research and publications. We have Slava who does the podcast. And then we do some, we from time to time, we'll pull some events together. Always hard because it's like herding cats, you know, getting everybody to show up at the same Zoom link or physical location at a time. But those are really impactful. We want to do more of them this year.
I wanted to ask, so you mentioned Slava in the podcast. I listened to the most recent episode earlier, and I was looking back at like some of the names, people you've had on there, and it's like this congressman, Anthony Scaramucci, you know, there's all these names where I was like, oh, wow. And, you know, then I looked up, I was like, okay, Slava was, you know, founded Indiegogo, et cetera, starts to make sense. But I think it's interesting that like there's that, and that is kind of a personality driven thing where he is really the face of it. But then you guys aren't so much the bylines of the newsletter. And I'm curious like why you've made that decision, and if that's something you think about like branding it more as like, these are Eric's thoughts or these are Adam's thoughts, you know, like, is there a reason why you haven't done that? And why the podcast, obviously it's like one person recorded talking to another person, so you can't really avoid that kind of personal branding. But yeah, my question is like, if you have thoughts about that around the byline on the newsletters.
I mean, you know, Slava does have that pedigree, right? He started Indiegogo, which you could argue was kind of version one of where we're now in version three of sort of crowd-based finance. He was part of that Jobs Act. You referred to Congressman McHenry, who he knows quite well. You know, Joe Lonsdale's in there. Scaramucci fits in on the crypto side. So a lot of these, like, the types of investments we're talking about, like, he had a hand in making possible, like, 10 years ago. And he more has that personality. So yeah, he takes the lead on sort of that opinion and interacting with people who want to like come on our podcast and share their thoughts and backgrounds. I'm more into the sort of news you can use approach, which is just, here's the important stuff that there's opinion on it for sure. But there's not trying to convince you of some way of thinking or some religious dogma or some, thesis. I do think that's interesting. I think we have room for that in the Vincent content universe, but it's like, you know, you want to get something right before you go and do like five other things. And we just haven't gotten there yet.
Ed, to answer your question about the bylines, that was a conscious decision we made many years ago that we felt that the newsletter should come from Vincent, the company, rather than, you know, this is written by Adam Katz or Eric Cantor. It's also somewhat of a collaborative thing. So it's not necessarily just one of us writing the entire newsletter. We look over these things. And so it really is like a company-wide thing. And I feel like when you can do that and build trust from the company, that's going to be more valuable than just, here's what I think about this collectible thing that happened or this art thing that happened. Especially because, at least for me, I think that the core of the mission isn't, hey, we're going to tell you what to think or what to do. It's more that we're going to teach you what's important to look for, and that it is important to do your own research and to diligence things and to take into consideration all of the information out there before coming to a decision. And so I think that the way that we have it now, where it's just coming from Vincent rather than one of us, kind of reflects that ethos the best way.
Yeah. On that, kind of on the same topic, do you have like editorial guidelines you've baked in?
We definitely have it. We talk about it a lot, like on a week to week, and, you know, just in the Slack group. There's definitely principles. If you ask me to send you like 47 pages of them, like Financial Times, that's not something we can do. But like, there's definitely places we go and don't go. And it also evolves. I mean, we're talking about, well, what's the next frontier? What's the next investment area that our users are asking for? And do we feel like we can deliver that? Or how do we get there to do that? Incidentally, just as a side note, I did not go to journalism school, but I did get a master's of international affairs degree in between a couple of my companies. And I took a, and this is at Columbia, I took a number of classes at the journalism school. And when I finished the master's degree, I said to my advisor, I said, you know, I think I want to either build another business with all this stuff I've learned here or be a journalist. Ended up going to East Africa and having another different adventure, more about building tech and a business. But I always did have that kind of interest there. And I'm I'm finding it very satisfying to pursue that now. I don't know. I don't think I'd call myself a journalist, but like the idea of taking complicated ideas, synthesizing them, looking for truth, and then sharing it with people in a way that, that helps them save some time and frustration is definitely wired into me pretty deep.
To jump in, to answer your question, Francis, there's, you know, within the worlds that we are covering, which, you know, tend to be pretty discreet, you know, I don't think there's areas or things that we're avoiding writing about. You know, I think that we all, Eric and I are both interested, and Slava, very interested in this world. We're interested in the different asset classes. We each have, you know, our own opinions and own favorites and things that we might not be as interested in. But I think what's important is that we, even if I might not think that I would invest in a certain thing personally, it might be something that somebody else is interested in and might find informative and might find interesting. And also it might be a good investment for them. And so I think that we do our best not to editorialize as much, to try and keep this, at least in the newsletters, a more neutral space. We never want to say, hey, like, this is a great investment. You need to get your money in right now. And we also don't want to say, oh, this is a terrible investment, like, stay away, unless it is very obviously a terrible investment. But it's more informative and shaping people towards what they should be looking for, as opposed to, like, giving them the opinion that they should have, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. You're presenting this information. People can do it what they will. Still thinking about kind of this journalistic aspect, you know, I'm a big believer in the idea that any content anybody is putting out online is in competition with any other piece of content anyone could be consuming, whether it's a TV show or, you know, just comments, you're reading comments on social media, you're on Twitter, whatever. It's all in competition, right? And I think big picture, like macro level of what you guys are doing, you're in competition, like I said, with like a Financial Times, from like a Robin Hood, you know, weekly newsletter, to people chatting on like Reddit Wall Street Bets, right? Like anybody feasibly interested in investment is like potentially spending some of their time doing that. And like, do you guys think about like your content in relation to these other things that anybody feasibly interested in investing could be looking at it? Like, how do you make sure that your story stands out and people are coming to you instead of spending, you know, their hour of time every afternoon reading content from any of those other sources?
Hopefully you're spending 5 minutes, not an hour, but and maybe you're reading a few newsletters, because we believe that newsletters and this type of sort of more intimate affinity-based communication is how people are going to get their information, because they trust the source, they're interested in the material being covered, and they want to save time, right? They don't want to go Googling 29 different stories, fighting through paywalls, trying to interpret what it means. They just sort of want to digest it. I'm the same way with other fields. Like, you know, I read a newsletter in the morning telling me what happened in the news and politics, because I don't want to go dig into that. You know, we're not breaking stories, right? We're not like the first to find out about OpenAI's financing. What we are able to do is tell a certain type of investor, right? And it's not a big hedge fund. You know, we get a couple of those, but we're not focused on that big institutional need. And it's not somebody who just got their first, you know, Robinhood, you know, app and a couple free shares. It's the people, the everyday people like us, like the people in between, who are really fascinated by these asset classes and know there's an opportunity there and want to sort of learn about it as they go and get exposed to some interesting and potentially hopefully profitable and you know, learning based opportunities to invest. And that need isn't being served as much. There's a lot of the inside baseball and there's a lot of the 101 beginner stuff, but there's not a lot of, like, it's called the 201, right? You know, a little bit to be dangerous. Now let's really help you refine that. So that's the audience we have. And that's, you know, we feel like there's a massive audience for this out there. So it's less about knowing some scoop that somebody else does or doesn't have. And it's more about just meeting people really where they are and where they want to go.
Yeah. I mean, to be perfectly frank, we don't really think about other people doing this stuff. We're not sitting around thinking like, how can we differentiate ourselves from, you know, Robin Hood snacks or Morning Brew or whatever. Like, we feel pretty comfortable with our place in this particular ecosystem. And we do know that there aren't a lot of people doing what we're doing and covering the asset classes that we're covering and that have our kind of expertise in it. So you know, I'm not saying that we're the best thing out there, but we don't really take a lot of time to consider what the competition is doing. I think we have a good idea of what we want to accomplish and how we can accomplish that. And I think we're on the path. There's obviously still a lot of room to improve, but I think that we have gotten better at it. And I think that by focusing on this newsletter stuff, we're getting closer to fulfilling like our mission, our original mission of bringing these asset classes to the general public.
I mean, yeah, if you're spending too much time thinking about the competition, you're just going to make stuff that looks like the competition too. And like I said too, it's not necessarily like direct competition, but more so the like baseline content level competition, attention economy competition. So I wanted to ask about like, again, the audience and growing the audience. So it's at 70,000. How have you got to 70,000? Like, what were the ways? How did you get like the first, you know, 1,000, first 10,000? Was there any inflection points? Like, where have those people come from to your content?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a number of chapters on it. I mean, I'd say the first 1,000 just like people we knew, right? We're fairly well connected in like the venture startup community. And you know, we said, hey, we're starting this company, sign up. And then, okay, we have all these email addresses. What should we do with them? Oh, I know. Let's send them an update that might be interesting. And you know, it's not so different from user 70,000, right? Like, they still got to put out something interesting that's compelling, and they don't care, right? If you're the 70,000th person, you don't really care that there are 69,999 others, right? You want it. This is like a context for me that I want to get into. And if I don't want to get into, it's pretty easy. I just hit this one button and I'm done. I don't have to think about that again, which I do. You know, I unsubscribe from newsletters like almost every day because I'm on a lot of them. So I think we've just gone through these different chapters of evolution, and at each chapter, the people who want to be in, you know, hunker down, and the ones who don't leave. So by a few years down the road, you really have a strong audience in the sense that like the people that want to be there are there. And it's really morphed through, there's a lot of word of mouth. There's a lot of different press and launches that we've done. We do a little bit of acquisition through some of the ecosystems we're in, like Beehive, Sparkloop, just piggybacking on other like similar interest areas and trying to share, you know, that way cost effectively. But yeah, it's you know, there's a lot of ways to reach the right reader, and they know who they are, and they vote quickly, right? Getting in, getting out. I mean, they make the decision. I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Adam.
I mean, I think that for newsletters, growth is always one of the top concerns, if not the top concern. You know, you want to bring more people. And we know that we feel there is a large audience for this, and we've just kind of scratched the surface. And, you know, if we were to talk next year, I would hope that our audience would be as committed and as passionate, but significantly larger.
Hopefully, knock on wood. So what about with the other newsletters that it's, I think it's what, 6 months and 3 months they've been around respectively. And you said you've got in the 30,000s for both of them. Is that just like people, did you just opt in people from the spotlight, or did you like give the option, hey, you can sign up for this? How did you get those counts?
Like Eric said, we've spent years in kind of different iterations of the business, bringing people onto our like master list, from the search engine, from our investors, from people who went to our events or podcast listeners, people who were early readers of, you know, what was then called Pulse is now called Spotlight. I mean, there's a lot of different paths that people got in there. But I would say just before we got onto Beehive with our old provider, we did a large audience survey, and we were trying to drill down what asset classes people were most interested in. And we've actually done some version of that survey many times over the last 3 or 4 years. And consistently, the top two were real estate and venture. And so we knew that those were going to be the ones that we wanted to have people, you know, that we wanted to introduce as our like specific deeper dive newsletters. And so we knew who was interested in those things. We invited them in, and we've done a lot of work to grow those lists separately than Spotlight itself. Like we have these growth programs for each one of the newsletters separately, if that makes sense.
There's always been this thesis we've had, and it proves out in the data, right? Like Adam, I think you just said that, you know, last survey or one of the surveys we did, 80% are interested in venture and 80% are interested in real estate. So, you know, depending how it's clearly more overlapping than not, right? So a lot of people want to be on both of those. Some want to be on one, but not the other. Some want to be on neither. The broader publication Spotlight is kind of like all encompassing. So it talks about a lot of different assets. The other ones go a little deeper, which some people like. So again, people filter, you know, we invite certain people. Hey, it seems like you're interested in venture. You want to try this. Some say yes, some say no, but they get themselves to where they need to be. And we think that there's at least two other verticals that are high interest, maybe not as much as these two, but two other verticals that we could really engage people in pretty richly and meet what we believe they're asking us for, just in the private market investment world.
Which, I mean, it makes sense that people are signed up for all three of them, because I think they all go on different days of the week. I forget if one's like Monday, one's Wednesday, one's Friday, whatever. And so it would make complete sense to then have two more, and then you're sending a newsletter every day of the week, but it's so like choose your own adventure. You don't have to get, like, you can be subscribed to only one. And yeah, so I think that makes a lot of sense. And like, you know, then you're only focusing on one thing.
That is definitely the path that we are headed down, for sure.
Yeah. No, that's smart. I wanted to ask, like, so 5 years, you've got to this from a very different start. How are you thinking about the next 5 years? Are you thinking that far in advance, or is it kind of just like we're sending this newsletter issue by issue and we see where we go? Or is there kind of this 5-year vision of that?
5 years is a lot, but we definitely are thinking of the future. You know, we probably look at more like 18 to 24 month increments. You know, we believe there's a story to be told here that's really, like Adam said, just scratching the surface. So what does that look like at a more serious scale? Like you said, daily newsletters on different topics so people can choose their own adventure, but also a lot more engagement around, you know, a lot of people are thinking about who am I investing with, right? So there needs to be some either in-person events and conferences, which exist in our industry, but they're still very like primitively organized and thought through. And or, you know, some kind of club or community that you can be a part of. So we see a roadmap of 18 months where we just do what we're doing bigger, better, and engaging more people with it. There's also a lot of other like complementary components we can bring in once we get there. Ideally, you're going to be hearing about Vincent Media on a much bigger stage in 5 years, but even two.
Yeah, I would add to that. We definitely plan for the future. There's always alterations to be made as you continue on, but I do think that everybody that I talk to who asks me what I'm doing, you know, what do I do for a living, whether it's friends or people I've just met, when I tell them I see that there's an interest there from pretty much everybody. And maybe they're not interested in crypto, or maybe they're not interested in real estate, but one of these things that we talk about is going to catch your attention. And when you're talking about art, or you're talking about collectibles, these things are really interesting. I mean, that's how I got involved with it in the first place, is that I think that these things are very interesting. And I think that the newsletter is a great way to get people in, but I would love to expand it further and be able to tell more in-depth stories about these things and the companies and the investments and just the asset classes in general. And I think that that is a path that we are trying to get towards. And in the short term, we definitely want to build out our brand and also, you know, get to a point where we are sending something out every day. And then past that, just expand our offerings. You know, we're focusing more on the podcast as well now. I think that there is a lot of interest in a lot of these asset classes, and I don't think there's a lot of other people covering them the way that we are.
Yeah. So right now it's just newsletters and a podcast, and, you know, you have a Twitter account, you have a LinkedIn account, et cetera, but it's not really a social presence. I'm wondering too, if that's like, if there's, you know, do you expand and you have like somebody talking about these on TikTok every day or whatever? Like, do you think about expanding to these other media, or is it just like newsletters? I mean, obviously newsletter is so perfectly suited for this, right? It's intimate. You should send it out like once a week for each thing, and that's like enough people need. But yeah, do you think about like getting on social and expanding kind of the media offering, the content offering in that way?
Definitely. We want to be telling these stories in various channels. I think we've had a pretty strong belief in do one thing really well and then do the next thing, which is why we haven't gotten as deeply invested in any particular social channel. And we're, you know, we're a very small team. We'd like to hire, you know, if you know of anybody who's super skilled in these areas and wants to create and wants to engage, like we definitely want to go bigger now that we've got like the core team locked down. But yes, I mean, we definitely think those channels are really relevant to telling any story, and we should avail that to ourselves and to the partners that we work with.
Okay. Next thing I do want to definitely talk about while you guys are both here is monetization, right? So, you know, I know you have ads, but mm-hmm. I'm curious, like, what sustains Vincent as a business? Obviously, all of you who are involved in it are investing, and you have income that way. This isn't your only source of income. That's kind of, you know, just part of the whole thing here. But I am curious if, like, Vincent is sustainable as a business. Is there a revenue stream that allows you to hire a whole other person, et cetera? Or is it like you are actively investing in the business yourselves to keep it going? What is kind of the revenue situation?
Yeah, so we're pretty close to being a profitable business. We're not there yet. Made a ton of progress on it. We do have investors. So we do have some capital to rely on to run these experiments or to invest in a new person or a growth tactic prior to it becoming profitable. But like, you know, we're like everyone else in the ecosystem today, you know, that investment better yield some fruit in like 3 to 6 months or else it was a bad one, which is really different from the climate of a couple of years ago. But our revenue mainly right now comes from partnerships. So people sponsor our newsletter, they sponsor links in our different newsletters, they create events with us, they come on our podcast, they pull us into other bits and pieces of their marketing and content efforts. And that is the revenue stream we have and a revenue stream we believe we can grow pretty substantially. There's a huge need. Remember, we talked at the beginning about how this whole ecosystem of investment managers and platforms and providers and issuers now, if you're familiar with Reg A, have come to light after the Jobs Act. So all of those people need to tell their story. And they're generally consumed with either, you know, regulatory and compliance, which is a huge burden in our space, as we've all lived ourselves as well and understand, and just running the investment operation of the business. So this idea of going out and getting customers and telling the story doesn't always come supernaturally to them. So that's where we step in. They trust us. The audience trusts us. We have to try to convey some of that trust. And like Adam said, that is challenging. We've had situations where we had one recently where we said, we looked at one of the investments that somebody wanted to talk about and we weren't really comfortable with it. You know, our test is, would you evaluate this for your grandmother's, you know, retirement account? You know, understanding that these are, you know, edgy assets, right? Like there's always risk in a startup or any of these deals we're talking about, but you want to feel like it's mitigated enough that these are real serious people with serious conversations to have. And so if it's not that, we won't even run it. Luckily, there's this whole ecosystem of providers and managers, and they all want help telling that story. So that's really the opportunity for Vincent Media right now.
That's really interesting. I think with the ads too, it's like, you know, you have good data about your audience, and you know that it's such a high value audience that then allows you to charge a pretty nice fee to sponsor a newsletter, advertise in a newsletter. So is that like, is 100% of your revenue these kind of partnerships inclusive of ads and events and whatever? That's 100%.
That is our revenue to date on the media business. We have, you know, had other types of arrangements in the prior chapters of Vincent, some of which still pay royalties to us. But yeah, like this is all we're selling and doing right now. Mm-hmm. And this is what needs to sustain the business. And that's really where the opportunity is that we're focused on.
Do you have like a couple other revenue streams that you're like hoping to launch in the next 18 to 24 months? Or is it still like just scaling partnerships?
Yes and no. I mean, we want to get this right before we move on to the next thing, but there's a lot of services and products that our investors demand and need. And so we are open to how can we help provide that? For instance, a lot of people would like to take a course on being a better investor in one or more of these asset categories. We have some partners who want to build that course. So, you know, do we trust what they're building and want to launch it with them? Do we want to let them be a partner and just sponsor us? Or do we want to actually get involved a little more deeply in the delivery of that? And there, you know, I just mentioned courses as one popular area, but there's a lot of different services that would make sense to introduce to our channel.
Something that I just want to make sure is out there is that we have no plans and we do not want to, and we are never going to charge for the newsletters. You know, this is something that we're very committed to, keeping the newsletters free for the readers, because I think that's a big part of our, you know, our mission is to democratize these assets, but also democratize this information. So it like, I know that that there's a very natural thing for newsletters to start as a free thing, and then maybe they start charging and you pay a little bit more and you get better features or whatever. That is not something that we are intending to do.
Yeah. So I like that, like having that guarantee to the audience. And I'm always curious when I talk to people who like are building an audience like this, like what you think your responsibility to your audience is. Like, again, going back to traditional journalism, there's usually this assumption of like the responsibility of, you know, X like national publication is to give readers like some version of truth, right? To this, the objective journalistic truth, whatever. How do you think about your responsibility to your audience? Like in what level are you accountable to the 70,000 people reading the newsletter, right? Like, how do you, because that's kind of, you know, that's a lot of people. What's your responsibility to them?
You know, I mean, I think we talk to them the way we would talk at a cocktail party or on a stage or in a text message thread with your cousin, which is, you know, I don't know everything, but I want to give you the guidelines to be successful in space. And, you know, we talk about these partners and sponsors, like people understand that we're giving them a platform to introduce a deal, but you still have to like go look at it for yourself. That's really the ethos that we're trying to, you know, perpetuate here.
I mean, I think it's a great question, and I think that it's something that we talk about a lot because we want to make sure that we're acting with like the utmost integrity and honesty here when communicating, because we don't want to lead anybody astray. Because this is, to a lot of people, this is a new and foreign world of investing, and like Eric said, there's a lot of risk inherent in a lot of these asset classes, and specifically in some of the opportunities in the asset classes. There's a lot of potential reward, but there's a lot of risk, and I think it's really, really important to communicate that. And I think my goal, and I think our goal for these newsletters, and something that we've talked about a lot, is that we want to have somebody who's a regular reader. If you read our newsletters every week, you will come away not as a expert or somebody who has a deep knowledge, but you will have a strong understanding of what is currently happening in those worlds right now, that you aren't going to feel like you've missed something big that we haven't covered or something important that we haven't covered. And I think that's what we're trying to promise the audience here, is that give us 5 minutes of your time to read this newsletter every week, and you're going to come away learning a lot more than you knew before.
It's a good proposition. Yeah.
I have to jump in 2 minutes, but I just want to make one point that you didn't really ask about, but I just wanted to make sure it was in part of this chat. So, you know, the newsletter business is evolving. And one of the things we geek out on that's pretty fascinating is this trade of newsletters and subscribers and the economics underneath it. We spoke a little bit about on the call. I just wanted to acknowledge that like a tool like Beehive that goes a lot deeper than, you know, the prior email system we're using, that just, you know, you put in a list of emails and you send some emails, but there was no notion of how many are there, how much is this worth, how can you earn money, how can you get more of these people, like just that end-to-end tooling. It's been very influential, like what we've been able to, how we've been able to approach this. B, it's fascinating. See, I think I have like 17 items on the Beehive roadmap, 4 support tickets in, 9 people that I'm harassing on a regular basis. And so like, in a way, I do feel like a connection to the company. Unfortunately, I was never given the option to invest in the company, but, you know, we'll leave that aside. But really, you know, Beehive is a part of our operation in a pretty profound way, more than many other tools that we've used in the past or are using now. And I just wanted to acknowledge that just as part of the chat.
No, thank you for that. Yeah.
I would add to that that, you know, we moved to Beehive last June, and that has profoundly changed how we've conceived of this business and the business model, because at that time we hadn't fully committed to focus the newsletter as our primary source of income and our primary product. That was part of the transition. We were thinking, okay, if this works, this could be a direction that we go down. But I do think that was a big part of it, was switching over to Beehive. And, you know, I think that it's a large reason that we are doing what we are doing right now.
It sounds like it was a pretty, like, you know, big switch was flipped. What specifically?
In my view, I'm going to answer, I'm going to jump off. In my view, it's actually just that Beehive understands, like, it's philosophical. It's not like the feature. Oh, yeah, that button on your site's really cool. You know, it's you guys are like backing up the business we're trying to build, and all of the features and all of the roadmaps are driving toward making that more successful. And it's not perfect, right? You're on the quest to make it perfect, but like the concept, the idea is very aligned with what we're doing. That's where it's special, I think. Anyway, I got to jump. Thank you.
Pleasure to meet you. I'll be in touch soon. Thank you. Adam, if you could stick around for a second, I'd love to ask you a couple more questions.
Sure.
Of course. Big one that I always like to get as kind of like something to extract for the audience is just any really tactical advice about creating a newsletter, sustaining a newsletter, growing a newsletter, writing a newsletter, whatever it is, any tactical advice about operating a newsletter that's like something anybody reading this who also operates a newsletter could take away and apply to their work.
Sure. I mean, this might not be exactly the answer because I don't know how tactical it is. And we touched upon it before, and I think you even were talking about it, but it's, you need to find something that you believe in and something that you are interested in, because I think the audience is going to know that. You know, I think your passion for something and your interest in something is going to come through in your writing. And like Eric said, this is something, you know, if you were in our weekly meetings, a lot of, you know, Slava and I especially are, you know, talking about, you know, these collectible sales and these things, like it's what we're interested in. And also just investing. We all come from slightly different investing backgrounds, but I think we have very similar philosophies. So what I would say to somebody who, I guess this is more advice for somebody who's starting a newsletter as opposed to currently has one. But if you're starting one, you know, you need to, if you love sports or you love a sports team, or you, like you said, with the fantasy Premier League stuff, like, or if you are super, even, you know, I know there's a ton of crypto and AI newsletters out there, but if that's something you're passionate about, I think that's going to come through. I guess for existing newsletters, I think that two things. One, like, I think it is very important to know your audience. And I think that in this quest for like growing your list, you need to make sure you're growing your list with the right people, with the people who are going to stick around. Because if you add 1,000 people in a week and then 2 weeks later, 3/4 of those people aren't reading or are unsubscribing or whatever, are not engaged, it's really not helping you. It's not helping grow your audience. It's not helping, you know, you as a newsletter business, because you want to have people, you know, we have readers who've been reading us every week for 4 years, you know, and so we can think like, okay, those people are going to probably be with us 2, 3, 4 years down the line. And so I think this kind of like grow your list at all costs mentality can be kind of counterproductive. You want to have the right people. You want to make sure there's an overlap there.
Yeah, I very much agree with that. I think like, it's not just about newsletters too. It's like, you know, venture funded businesses or whatever, this kind of growth at all costs thing is, so I think is becoming, people are becoming more cautious about it, which is good. That's a whole other conversation. But I did want to ask about like, maybe to underline the tactical bit of advice, like it sounds like you guys run surveys pretty regularly and are quite good at collecting data about your audience and like, and knowing, you know, affirming that these are the right people and probably cleaning your list sometimes too. So my question would just be like, what do you do to gather that? Like, what's your advice for like understanding your audience and actually learning about them so you can know these things and make these decisions?
I mean, I think the easiest way is just like an onboarding, a quick onboarding survey. Because I think that's going to be when you're going to catch people's attention the most, is when they sign up, because they've signed up for this thing. It's also a way to filter out people who might have not intended to sign up, or, you know, didn't exactly know what they're getting. I think that that's important too. And there's a give and take, because you don't want to bother people with surveys too often. But I think if you do it when they sign up, that's going to give you some very good data. And I think it's important to know what your audience is interested in. I mean, if we hadn't run these surveys, I would not have expected real estate and venture to be so overwhelmingly like the most popular thing. So we might have launched a different vertical first, but I think that knowing that made us very comfortable and very confident in doing those as our first two.
Yeah. So I imagine you've probably changed your survey, your onboarding survey a few times, and, you know, experimented to make it better. Can you share a thing about like, what's the sweet spot? Like, is there like only ask this many questions, or like make sure that you're giving, you know, radio button choices instead of a text answer? Like what makes a good onboarding survey?
I mean, keep it short, right? Short and sweet. Something that you can tell them, you know, this is going to take you a minute to do, and it's going to take them a minute at most. Cause I mean, even I'm sure you've seen, but you know, even in any survey, you're going to see a huge drop off after the first question. And so, you know, you got to pick the three things that you really want to know. And I think people are willing to click a few times and do it if it takes you 30 seconds. But I also, you know, maybe I think people have different philosophies on this, but I think, you know, multiple choice or whatever, giving them the click rather than like having a box is going to get you a lot more answers, because asking somebody to provide the answer rather than just clicking a button is such a bigger ask. Maybe like at the end, like, you know, you throw like any additional thoughts or whatever, but you want to make sure you get the information you need. And so you're going to have to distill it down to make sure they're going to give it to you.
No, I agree. It's almost like shocking how unwilling people are to give that information. There's like some newsletter I was trying to onboard for recently too, and I'm very patient. I work and, you know, I'm very patient about this.
Yeah,
like, I'll
sure.
entertain you. And there was like, I was on like page 10 of like a type form, and I gave up. I was like, I don't want to give you all this information. Like, I don't care. I'm pretty free with my information, whatever. It's 2024, you know, but it was just like, anyways, there is maybe just one more question I want to ask you and then probably wrap up. Again, talking about like, you got to be passionate about it. You're going to be working on a lot. Do you have any idea how much time you spend on this per week? And maybe it's like, I don't know, you know, I don't know if you're doing Vincent full time and that's, you know, 40 plus hours a week or whatever, or like maybe focus in on just one of the newsletters you do. Like, cause every time I ask this too, I will say people can rarely give me a good answer. Cause it's like, again, it's like, this is just what I'm interested in. So like, even when I'm not working on this, I am actually, you know, working on it. And then what I'm like reading for fun while eating my sandwich is like what trickles down into the newsletter. So now I'm just rambling a bit, but yeah, my question is like, do you have any idea how much you spend on like writing one of these newsletters per week?
Sure. I mean, so to answer one part of that question, it is our full-time job, you know, all of us. But the newsletter is a substantial part of it. There's also a lot of other business stuff, and, you know, sales and all sorts of fun stuff that doesn't go into writing the newsletter. So, but to answer your question, for one newsletter, I mean, it is like, what do you count, right? Like, do you count all the time that I'm wasting scrolling on Twitter? Or, you know, I mean, I don't know how productive that is necessarily. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. You know, I would say it also really depends on the week. Like, as we speak, Spotlight is coming out right now at 4 p.m. And this issue I felt was like one of the best ones that I've written in a long, long time. And one of the easiest ones, because it was just like, there's so much good stuff this week, like so much good stuff. There's these great auctions, this great article about art, this, you know, big real estate news came out. Like, there's a bunch of like big IPOs, you know, Reddit and Klarna, and then there's like Stripe had a new valuation. Like, there's all this stuff. And then there's some weeks where it's like, oh my God, nothing happened this week. Like, And so you've really got to dig deeper and be like, okay, how can I make this interesting? Like where, how, what, cause I want to make sure that the stuff is coming from that week. I don't want to dig back to 2-3 weeks ago to try and find something. Like it has to be current stuff. And so like on a good week, it's not like it writes itself, but like it feels more like that. Sometimes it takes 2 or 3 times longer because I have to really figure out what stories to write about and how to make it interesting and informative. So, you know, it can be, you know, 5 to 10 hours, or it could be 10 plus hours. It really depends.